This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor with Professor H.J. Mackinder, International Relations. Two capitals in the world island. The first, Beijing. Xi Jinping making threats routinely now. Is it 2024, 2025, 2027? He's going to recapture, regain, or bring back into the fold, or invade and destroy Taiwan. So we go to Beijing, and then we're headed to the other capital of the most important state in Eurasia, and I don't mean Russia, I mean India. But first, Beijing. Professor, the leader of the Chinese Communist Party, Xi Jinping, much in the news for his diplomatic initiatives at the behest of his foreign ministry, I'm sure, the peace in the Middle East and conversation in Moscow with Vladimir Putin, a no-limit a partnership. And there's even talk of a phone call or some exchange with Zelensky in Kyiv, although nothing's come of that. So Beijing's point of view, I mention also that the information I had during the week that I account is that the recovery from the zero COVID disaster is not going well and that Beijing remains troubled by its trade numbers and its unemployment. Troubled is a diplomatic word. So Beijing's point of view.
Well, I think what you say, troubled, is absolutely right. At one of our American universities, we've just had a conference that ended today about the future of China, and one of the participants called me up to put me into the picture, as we used to say. And I couldn't believe what complete nonsense these people were saying. What we have to understand about China is that China is, first of all, she's been overestimated ever since the late 1960s and the 1970s. And the whole Kissinger-Nixon initiative, and then it got even worse with Carter, and then Clinton added a few more twists that made it just terrible. That was based on illusions. According to the Dutch Research Institute in Groningen that looks at what's really the case, and they said that probably you have to discount the claimed Chinese GNP by about 60%. It's quite clear that the country is really, they're on the edge of bankruptcy, and they owe a tremendous amount of money, which they simply don't have. I think it was yesterday, or perhaps it was the day before, the Federal Reserve Bank quietly lent $60 billion to the Hong Kong Monetary Authority because the Hong Kong dollar is pegged to the U.S. dollar. And what's interesting is that if Hong Kong ceases to have a convertible currency, then she's finished economically. Of course, I think she already is because of other reasons. But the interesting thing is that Peking was not able to come up with the U.S. dollars needed to do this backing, and the Fed had to bail out Hong Kong to keep going the pretense that somehow Hong Kong is dynamic. But in any case, the Japanese have also had a meeting, and they're very good. And they say, and I think this makes some sense, that Xi has now installed himself in power. And it's rather unlikely, given how pervasively and thoroughly he has replaced everybody in the whole bureaucracy, and he's changed everything. He's even taken Mao off of the list of sacred books, and to be replaced with exclusively by Mr. Xi's works. And therefore, it's unlikely that he is going to be somehow ejected from power. He has an extraordinary degree of control, but he doesn't have popularity at all. I think that he is despised by most Chinese. And that means that he is in a political dilemma. There is a saying in Chinese to have disasters at home and sort of defeats abroad. And what he is doing is giving up, to some extent, the wolf warrior diplomacy. They're now trying to make friends with the United States and the Philippines and various others. They don't understand that the only way that anybody is going to be convinced is if they alter their behavior, that their word is not worth anything. And he's going to be focusing on strengthening his power in China. He's extending the police system he's essentially building a new bottom story for the Chinese police system, so that in every city neighborhood, in every village, there's going to be a police station. He's counting on simple repression and brainwashing to keep everything going. But this doesn't explain how people are going to be employed. The economy is shrinking, and demand is falling, and there's no obvious way that he's like Russia. It's not clear what Putin could do to save things now. And likewise, I think Xi may be a leader that who presides over gradual and perhaps catastrophic decay. So China is probably not going to be the kind of geopolitical player. I think that Xi understands that if he were to attack Taiwan is now an international issue. This is what the Chinese have long feared. And just Japan would be able to prevent China from taking Taiwan. If you've got the number of countries that are now on board, and we've got the United States getting serious about this, having tried to get Taiwan to disappear, now we're realizing that there's a real danger of war there. But it would be the end for Mr. Xi, and I think he would rather be like Chiang Kai-shek, who was sat in Taiwan, and so you can recover the mainland. But he never, if you had gone to the GMO and said, look, I figured it out, how about a year from now on February 11th, we recover the mainland. And I think the GMO would say, well, that's a good idea, but I think we probably want to do a little bit more research. I believe it's very important for us to be strong militarily. It's very strong for important for our allies to be militarily strong. We have to own the technologies. We can't cut on any of this. But as long as we maintain our strength and Japan and the others come up and become strong too, then I think that Xi is going to prefer to keep moving the date for the liberation of Taiwan out into the future, and enjoy life such as it is in the Imperial City.
Professor H.J. McIntyre, International Relations, commenting on Six Capitals, 6 Points of View. We're headed to Delhi, the power of Asia emerging. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.